Hi, Steve Cooper, and this is just a quick intro to my next podcast, which is on the topic of worryingly low promotion success rates, which are down to lack of learning time during work. And it's triggered by an article that was written by the Police Federation on their site on the 28th of February 2023 and was shared on social media. A very interesting headline, and it kind of intrigued me. I'm really interested to see the Federation pushing around support for promotion for their members. And when I looked at it, it was around protected learning time, essentially, and that being necessary to be provided for officers. An interesting take, maybe a bridge too far. But the wider article appeared to conflate the exam result with the wider process, i.e. the steps after the exam stage. So once you're successful on the exam, there are other steps to go through. So the National Police Promotion Framework Stage 3, which is the in-force selection process, which looks quite different around forces. And I think, you know, protected learning time would be a benefit for that. And I'm sure you get a lot of officers stick their hand up for that. Just a really interesting article. And I've shared some thoughts in the podcast around it. If you are a member of the Federation team, management team, you know, I know you've got some great conference facilities. I'm more than happy to come up and do a free promotion seminar for any of your members to provide some support. And that's an open invite, so I'll be contactable in relation to that. Just a really interesting article. And in the podcast, I look at, you know, issues faced by officers, not only in converting their exam result when they do get it, but, you know, It's about what happens from getting that ticket through to the end result. As I say, if you're listening to this and you just want to hit the ground running with your promotion preparation for a promotion board or selection process, and you're qualified, you've already got your ticket, then of course you can just download a digital toolkit or a promotion masterclass video from Rank Success. And there's lots of free videos, podcasts and guides you can download. And I look forward to hearing your commentary in relation to this podcast. Take care, stay safe. Hi, Steve Cooper, Rank Success. And this podcast today is around a headline or a piece in the police, by the Police Federation, which was written on the 28th of February. 2023, and entitled Worryingly Low Promotion Success Rates, and the fact that they were down to a lack of protected learning time during work. So this article that's published by the Federation was focused on data that they'd done in a survey, which was a subset of officers, and there's some stats put in there. But essentially the key thing around there is that the legal exam has low pass rates because there's no protected learning time. So officers are supposed to sit as part of their promotion process an exam, which most officers know in the UK, but there's no protected learning time given to them to study. So this is focused on, you know, England and Wales as such here, and officers are expected to study in their own time, and if they fail that, they must start again. And I think first and foremost that is probably something I can only ever remember, and so can lots of other officers, perhaps for generations, is that, you know, you go and have a go at the exam each year and see whether you're able to pass it. It is a stiff test, a tough test. I remember when I was doing the inspector's exam, certainly, and Juliana Mitchell, who I believe still helps officers pass their Part 1 or their MPPF Stage 2 law exam. She was with Tom Barron at the time, and I remember her making a comment that the syllabus that police officers have to pass for the exam is quite considerable and quite challenging. So it's definitely an undertaking to get that exam under your belt, whether that's for sergeant and inspector. And I think it's quite right, and I know there's arguments all around, but that it should be quite right that cops know the law. And whilst you can whip out your phone today and look something up on an app, which I'm sure many people do as well, it's kind of reassuring in some way that, you know, people have actually put themselves through some form of study, some form of challenge and process to show that there is a benchmark there of understanding law, and it can be quite in depth sometimes. And, you know, you certainly wouldn't want a barrister to be practicing who wasn't a qualified barrister or certainly representing you. Same goes for a solicitor, and you could argue for lots of other things. And of course, yes, you can argue all around this all you want, but the exam has always been there. And I think this low promotion exam pass rates, which is, so we're talking about the actual exam where you have multiple choice questions and there is a right or a wrong answer, and you have to get as many of those answers right as possible to get the pass mark, which I believe is 55% for sergeants and I think 65% for inspectors. And I think what the Federation are alluding to here are, and first of all, I mean, I'd like to say it's really nice to see the Federation getting so involved in the topic, the subject, the nature of promotion. And I know they're there, you know, to essentially to support their members, and they have to do that in lots and lots of different ways. Promotion is just one aspect of that. But it's nice to see that actually, you know, they are clearly representing an argument and interests around this, because it is a complex issue, as well as it being on the face of it simple, i.e. there's always a process that officers can choose to partake in. Yes, it changes, and yes, it looks like a postcode lottery, certainly in terms of National Police Promotion Framework Stage 3, which is the in-force selection process. And I've blogged about that, about the kind of postcode lottery. But this is coming back to the exam. It's really interesting to me to look at this, because the Federation are saying here that, you know, studying during personal time is disadvantageous for certain people, like people with a family or caring responsibilities, as opposed to those who have flexibility outside of work to study. And then they say the answer is clear. It benefits those who haven't got other responsibilities in the workplace. Well, I'm not sure that makes the answer clear. I certainly, when my children were young and I was studying for the sergeants and the inspectors exam, and everybody will know the routine here, you have to prioritise the time you do have over times that you would rather spend doing something else. And that's a story that's been kind of told through the eons, really. And certainly all the colleagues, all the peers, all the officers I worked with that went through promotion, whatever that looked like, and it did look different, they all had to, you know, spend some time really focused. And everybody studying for that exam now, and I think it's Paul O'Connor, and there's other people that help officers pass stage one, so Police Pass is another company, and they all help officers get through that kind of gateway, that first part of the promotion selection process, which you have to have. You have to get that ticket, you have to pass that exam in order to be in, with a chance, if you like, a ticket for the next part of the process. So I look at that and say, you know, disadvantageous to people who have flexibility outside of work. I think it's not as clear as what they're making out there, but I do, there's no doubt that, you know, there are people who don't have as much time to study, but I think that's more a fact of life than something the police can do, because if we're talking about the recommendation here, or the answer here, which is to provide protected learning time, you know, what does that really mean? What does that really mean in terms of protected learning time? Because if you look at another national scheme, so the degree entry scheme, where protected learning time was a mandated element of that, many forces were unable to comply or to support their degree entry student officers. And there are loads and loads of tweets. I wrote a blog about it and harvested some tweets from the internet, but some people were disadvantaged through that as well. So the issue around protected learning time is an interesting one, because people don't always get that in other industries where they have to study for exams and other kind of occupations. But let's just take it that you could have it. I mean, how long would that be? How long for? Would people who, would everybody get the same amount of time? Because those who've got protected learning time would also have the additional time at home that's argued about here. I mean, the world's not a fair place, and I know everybody wants the promotion selection process to be fair. I always take the easy point of view because I can and say promotion isn't fair. Of course it's not fair. It's fair if you can put the time in. It's fair if you are able to have some support, whatever that looks like. But the world isn't fair. Promotion isn't fair. Yes, there's lots of policies in place to try and make it as fair as possible. But it's always an aspiration, and you're never quite there because you'll always have a whole cohort of people who can argue the unfairness of promotion selection processes. And in relation to part one, it's clearly a stiff test. So having some protected learning time is a good idea, but I think when you balance that against the fact that the police service or organisation, as the Federation allude to it here, it's actually 43 organisations plus, you know, there's more than 43 forces. But that's another way of looking at it because, you know, why don't they just have one process in place at one time, what I call the holy grail of promotion selection processes. You know, for fast tracks officers, there is a fast track process that is run nationally by the College of Policing. There's a national assessment centre. Yes, there's a kind of screening in-force selection process for that as well, which again looks different in different forces. But, you know, why don't they have a national selection process for all aspiring officers in England, Wales or across the UK? You know, each force has got their own process. But why don't they just have a national one? Because that's relatively easy to do. But it would probably be expensive, and then administrating that in terms of work-based assessment for the rest of the process is problematic, and I think it's probably too, the police service couldn't probably do that at the moment given all the other demands it has. But in relation to coming back to this part one, there needs to be more rigorous enforcement in how people are selected, and more standardisation so we can move to a place where those who are promoted are not those that particular senior officers may think fits their mould. So I think there's a conflation there between the exam, which is what I thought the article was about, and the rest of the process, which looks differently. So the National Police Promotion Framework is about registering your interest, passing the exam, which is MPPF stage 2, in-force selection process, which is an interview or a number of psychometric tests or a presentation or a briefing, and sometimes all of those things together because it looks differently across different forces. And then you've got stage 4, which is a period of work-based assessment whilst you're temporarily promoted. So it looks like it's conflating the issue around protected learning time around the exam with the wider process. But if it's about protected learning time for the wider process, I mean, what does that look like? You know, I am privileged to be supporting officers in lots of different ways and have done over the last few years since I left policing myself. And I've seen that some people could get 2 weeks protected learning time and it wouldn't be enough for them to get through a interview process ball with a promotion presentation exercise. It's 2 weeks wouldn't be enough. Some people 4 days, yeah, and that depends where they are. Others 3 months, 6 months, and of course it's for the birds that the police service could ever provide enough protected learning time. So what we're on about here is we're talking about a cohort of officers within policing who are have that aspiration. They believe that they can lead other people. They believe they've got what it takes to become a team leader, if you like, and to develop and to learn and to grow in the post. And they want to apply for advancement, career progression through the path of promotion selection. And it's interesting here that you know, the low promotion success rates that's alluded to in the article, there is action being taken around that, as I understand it, this year and probably for subsequent years, but certainly this year for the first time, promotion candidates for sergeant and inspector, I believe, can take, and you can go check this with the College of Policing or your force's Federation reps. But you know that you can take the science exam twice this year and the inspector's exam twice this year, and if they maintain that, that's a good little adaption, if you like, because it is unfair where you do have to study, so all the way through the beginning of the year for those going for sergeant, for March for the exam, and then for inspector for October. I mean, to kind of crash and burn, to kind of nearly pass an exam, that is disheartening, and it can be demotivating. So to be able to have two opportunities to do it is brilliant, and I think that's a really good change in the right direction. If we're talking about the holy grail of promotion selection processes, I don't think it exists. Since I've been doing this, and I left policing in 2014, there has been the integrated competency framework, there has been the policing professional framework, the metropolitan performance framework, the metropolitan leadership framework, and now we've got the competency and values framework, which should be what everybody aspires to do. And we're talking now beyond the exam now, this is for MPPF stage three. And it looks different. It looks different around the country. The CVF looks different around the country. So the main framework being recommended and utilised for promotion selection processes in the UK, that varies as well. So you've got the recommendation that practitioners are level one on the CVF, that's fine, and sergeants, inspectors and chief inspectors through promotion selection processes should be assessed at level two of that framework, fairly straightforward, unless you kind of look at what else is happening in other forces. So I think it was Lincolnshire that that assessed their sergeant promotion candidates at CVF level one, practitioner level, and I think it was Greater Manchester Police who assessed their inspectors going for chief inspector at level three. Now, of course, forces can do what they want, and they do, and they adapt, rebrand, in some cases kind of not reinterpret but change things. So values, for instance, are changed in different forces. I think the Metropolitan Police has different values, I think Humberside has different values, Staffordshire has different values, and they're all kind of localised things and nothing to kind of worry about. But it just goes to show that there is a main CVF framework there, but it can be adopted, and it often is adopted. So that's something you would need to know anyway for your promotion process, whether you had any protected learning time to do that or not. And essentially, people don't. So just coming back to that theme around protected learning time, what a wonderful, wonderful suggestion by the Federation, and if they're pushing for that, great. But everybody, the Federation, the cops studying for promotion, we all live in the real world as well. And in reality, what are you going to get? And I would say, in a way, there are some forces, I don't think it's all forces, but they are supporting their officers, they are providing protected learning time. So I know that where officers want to go for a study course to prepare, officers may have to pay for that. Sometimes I think they're subsidised, but the force will often provide duty time and for officers to go on those courses. And I know I benefited from that previously. It was a couple of days, I think, for what was the Tom Barron course at the time, and the force provided a couple of days of duty time for us to do. So I mean, that's what, 48 hours protected learning time. Certainly a good 24 hours, it was certainly full days, but I think to actually push for protected learning time is for the birds. I mean, it'd be lovely if it absolutely did happen, but I think it also comes back to what I was alluding to earlier on, which is you have always within policing a cohort of people who are driven, determined, enthusiastic, focused and motivated, and they're going to get through despite and in spite of all the barriers. And I don't think allocated time has ever stopped anybody. And if they have, if it has, then, that's part of the unfairness. But I don't think you could build in protected learning time. But there you go. I'm off on one there. I could go on forever on that. But, as I say, I think this is being conflated between the exam and the wider process, because once you've got that exam ticket in your hand, I mean, effectively, that's just a ticket. to enter the rest of the process. And arguably, that's even harder than the exam. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean, with the exam, you can either answer the right question or the wrong question. You're in competition with yourself in the exam. That's between you and the exam. You and yourself. When you enter a promotion selection process, after that, the next steps, the next stage, you are in competition with other people, essentially. And that's a whole different ball game. I mean, I would always argue you're in competition with yourself all the time. You can't do anything about anybody else. But it's an interesting kind of concept, really, that, you know, the exam rates, if you look at the Federation article, and it is only one article, and it is only, you know, a bit about one survey, but it's a subset of officers, and the stats show there that only one in six officers are successful, and therefore it's difficult kind of, you know, getting through the process. Well, you know, I've looked previously, and I've published blogs before on the statistics. So certainly for 2022, and I think I did for 2021 as well, I published the statistics for the pass rates for the exams for sergeants, and I think I did for inspectors as well. I haven't got my blog to hand. But, you know, if you're a UK police officer aiming for promotion, you know, competition heated up, certainly in 2020 onwards, because in England and Wales alone, the College of Policing released results of the legal exam, so MPPF Step 2, showing that 4,225 constables passed their sergeant's exam. Now, that's more than double those passing the exam 5 years ago. And also 2,809 sergeants passed the inspector's exam to qualify and apply for promotion to inspector, three times the usual number of each year. So all in all, that was 7,000 extra candidates that came into the promotion pool, added to thousands already in the pool across England and Wales alone, who are qualified, and here's the big thing, competing for promotions in 2022, or 2023 as it is now. Some of them will have got promoted, some of them may still be in the pool, and some of them may be, you know, having got their ticket. And there's another thing, I mean, the ticket lasts, you know, your exam pass lasts for 5 years. So there's a whole issue there, a whole topic there for me to kind of focus around with kind of experiences, because some people keep their momentum going and try and convert that exam pass straight away. For others, for all the reasons perhaps the Federation highlight, you know, they do have pressures, and if you've spent the whole summer, as it is for inspectors, and perhaps the period immediately after Christmas for sergeants through to the spring studying, you're going to want a breather, a well-earned breather. And you've certainly probably been away from your family, or you've not been able to spend as much time with family and do what you want for a while, so you're going to go and do that. So let's say, you know, the next year goes past, but I still have officers ring me, and it's a common occurrence, not an uncommon occurrence, with 1 year to go, and this is their last chance. And often when I kind of delve into that and say, well, have you had other opportunities? What was your feedback from other boards? No, I haven't. I've just better do it before my exam pass lapses. So there's a whole issue there as well, you know, as to if you do pass the exam, do you intend to kind of keep that momentum going and get through a selection process? 5 years is it's there for a reason. Is it arbitrary? I don't know. I mean, when I passed the exam years and years ago, was it 1989, something like that, you could take the sergeant's and the inspector's exam one after the other and keep them in the bag. And you were guaranteed then, you know, when you went for promotion, you didn't have to do any more exams. And just as I was about to do the inspector's exam, they pull the rug from underneath you and say, no, you have to be current, if you like. So I suppose there's something around currency and relevancy around that exam pass and your knowledge drop off. So you've got basically in, what was it, 2021, the highest number of additional candidates in any 1 year owing to the increased interest in promotion. So there is a big interest in it, and the highest number of passes in a decade. So that all coincided, I think, with the new online examination methods, which the College of Policing started using, I suppose, in 2020 through the pandemic and a needs must approach. But you know, thousands more officers also qualified in Police Scotland and the Police Service of Northern Ireland. But the UK forces had at that time around about 3,500 candidates at the federated ranks, more than usual, that they had to promote over a period of time. Now, I don't know whether they're all still in the pool, or I know that many of them have got promoted since, or are on their work-based assessment now or through it. But, you know, there were a lot of career progression opportunities then. So this must obviously be a big dip, certainly a forecast dip, if you like. But if you're seriously aiming to hit the bullseye and promotion, that's some contest there, to be able to have to pass an exam and then to have to pass the board. And I suppose that's why they give you that 5-year period, if you like, to be able to get it done in that time. So there's a tremendous amount of work that officers, aspiring officers, have already put in just to get on the starting line, just to pass the exam. And I suppose, you know, a protected learning time, if forces could do it, maybe officers could get 2 days or something. But, you know, when you start looking at forces that have got 400, 500, 600 people going for promotion at any one time, and 2 days protected learning time, it becomes a non-starter, really, because you've still got shifts and service delivery to prioritise. Okay, so again, that's an article that caught my eye, that Police Federation thing. And I think there are a couple of other things there around the process that people then go on to do. So whilst there's this protest around not having protected learning time and the difficulty of, you know, the exam, and I get that, but I think after that you've also got the fact that, what does the next stage look like? And it looks differently, as I alluded to earlier on. I've written blogs that suggest that it's a postcode lottery as to what promotion looks like at MPPF stage 3. And, you know, if you have a application, I know they've already been through that over the last few years. There is a cacophony created, a big a lot of whinging, moaning, whining and complaining, the fact that, you know, cops don't like applications, they're not relevant, how does it help? So, you know, chief constables and forces and HR departments have listened, and they've done away with those parts of the process in some forces, not all. Some have maintained and retained applications. But then, you know, they replace them with something like, you know, a psychometric test, so a situational judgment test, or in-tray exercises. And, you know, cops don't like those either. So again, we go back to the beginning, and there's a bit of, forgive me, but whinging, whining, moaning, complaining. We don't like these. How are these relevant? They don't fit policing, you know. And yet they are. They are entirely relevant sometimes. Many of those exercises reflect the role competencies or expectations. And then you've got presentations and briefings, and people find those problematic. And then we've got interviews. Again, you know, we don't like interviews. They're not relevant. Some people don't do well at interviews, and some people don't. So how do you actually come up with a process that is fair, this holy grail kind of thing? And I think we're getting now to the nub of it, really, that with 43 organisations, 43 forces, 43 chief constables, 43 command teams, 43 different ways of doing things, we're getting somewhere near to the fact that actually, could you drive a coach and horses through the middle of all that and just go, well, actually, we could do a national assessment. Osprey used to be nationally assessed. You used to get on a coach. You needed to have prepared for that because you were going to walk into an assessment scenario and do a series of 5-minute exercises. Again, the argument was made, well, that's not relevant, that's not topical, we don't like that, it's false. So they dropped that. They've kept the part one, MPPF part one, which is essentially the Osprey part one law exam, which is what we're still focused on here. But, you know, it doesn't really matter what the processes are or what the tests are. People are actually prepared to invest valuable, limited, finite time arguing against something that perhaps they as an individual can't get through, but forces need to have a process in place at any one time to manage the turnover and to fill the vacancies with, you know, arguably the best available people. That's what the process is there to do, and to kind of select people. So it isn't easy, all of this, I know that, and you know, there's no easy kind of answers to it. But what some of the other things on the other side of the exam that I see in terms of problems. So I've already talked about, you know, taking your foot off the accelerator after the exam. It happens, and I understand how it happens, but you know, that well-earned breather is needed. But I think at some stage that momentum needs to be regained, otherwise you find yourself 2 or 3 years down the line with perhaps one or two chances in the bag left to convert your leadership aspirations and your exam result into promotion success. And if you're listening to this and thinking, okay, well, some of that makes sense, Steve, you know, you might also want to know that some people need to go through a promotion selection process and fail it, be unsuccessful. Why? Because it's a fantastic learning opportunity. It really is. You know, you've got lots of, if you're lucky, you get feedback, but you've been in there, it's a bit like a dry run, and the second time you go in and smash it, and many people do. But there is a difference between actually preparing properly and effectively to increase your chances of smashing it first time with a kind of less vigorous approach, shall we say. So you need to get that breather after the exam. I understand that, because you'll have spent a lot of time doing it. But, you know, generally in amongst the cohorts of promotion applicants and aspiring applicants, you will find people, as I said before, who are energetic, driven, you know, motivated, enthusiastic, and then you get other people who will procrastinate in the same cohorts, the same people that got through the exams, and they will procrastinate and lose momentum, and before they realise it, all of that hard risk, if you like, is suddenly, that hard work is suddenly at risk of expiring due to the legal exam qualification time limits. And that's where I get calls from what I call the last chance saloon, where people say, is it possible, Steve? Am I able to still get back that momentum? And the answer, obviously we have a chat as to the individual circumstances, but 9 times out of 10, the answer is absolutely yes, it is. And as I said, I've got that tremendous privilege of helping hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, it's probably thousands now, well, it is thousands now, of aspirational officers to kind of approach promotion after they're qualified, and whatever their forced promotion selection process looks like, and to try and focus on some things that work to help them convert that exam into leadership and promotion success. Okay, so I mean, some of that I'm talking about now is around, I share free food for thought on the Rank Success YouTube channel. There are free blogs on my site, ranksuccess.co.uk. There's promotion masterclass videos. I do bespoke one-to-one coach mentor sessions as people need to. There are downloadable digital guides. There's a whole load of stuff to support you in that downtime, if you like. But to keep that momentum going, a little and often, is really important. So bite-sized chunks. So, you know, podcasts like this, you know, whip in and out of them and dip in and out of them as you want to. Keep a notepad, write down any aha moments, any light bulb moments, because you can keep, certainly if you intend to convert that exam, you know, you can keep that momentum going. And those podcasts, those blogs, and those downloadable digital guides cost you nothing. Of course, if you want to hit the floor, hit the ground running and keep your momentum going full pelt, then you can download a digital recorded masterclass with me, suited, booted, and leading you through where you need to be. In terms of raising your awareness and hopefully building your confidence in there. and there's a whole digital toolkit that focuses on rank specific. So there's a sergeant's toolkit, or if you're going into the inspecting ranks, sergeant to inspector and chief inspector, bespoke toolkits. So there's lots of resources available. Of course, it's about, you know, making sure that you are aligned to where you want to be and, you know, the momentum that you put into that. So evidently all these resources can provoke and support your thinking and keep that initial momentum going. And when they're combined with your personal drive and enthusiasm and your intent to learn, that kind of promotion bullseye comes clearly into focus and provides a bit of a clearer target. And I've got a little piece of paper here written that's testimonial from a successful inspector that just said, there's so much mystery surrounding promotion and your guides made it clear and easy to understand what was expected of me. And the reason I wrote that down is because that's clear to me. It was obviously clear to the individual as to the value of those individuals. But there are some mistakes I see with this. So I often see people leaving it too late to start preparing. And that's a conscious decision often for people to do that. Maybe because they have got other priorities and they're not prioritising this part of, you know, their career progression. Then there's into the process where people don't read instructions. So the force provide instructions, i.e. one of those would be, you know, there are word limits for applications and people exceed those word limits and wonder why they didn't get through the application process. And I've blogged about this before, but they don't answer the question on the application form or include the required content at the level expected. Another issue, just rush it and hope. I'll just pull all this together as fast as I can in 48 hours and hope. And the other time is, you know, as I've said, they pass the exam and don't go for promotion and then just make a mad dash before the limit expires. So, you know, it's an interesting theme that's been raised in the piece that started this really by the Federation around, you know, low rates, and maybe those rates are dipping now with people going for the promotion exam, but I don't think the answer is, as alluded to, protected learning time, because if it was the answer to that, it must be the answer to other aspects as well. And I think the issue of the exam is conflated with the wider process, i.e. the other steps to National Policing Promotion Framework. So I think, you know, is it all just smoke and mirrors? You know, maybe, because as I've said, there are, you know, there are different processes in place at different times in different forces for different ranks, and you know, it doesn't matter what makes up the promotion selection process. What is needed is effective preparation. Give yourself a good run up, the best run up you can, and that's what we're talking about there. Back to the issue of time, what will you choose to sacrifice to make you, enable you to prioritise this part of your life, if you like, your life aims and goals? Okay, well, I think I've covered a lot of things there. So for me, I mean, having read all that in summary, I would say it's no change, no change. There's no change to anything that I see that's urgent, if you like. I mean, one of the things in there, just as a last observation I might make, is that, you know, there is a balance between experienced officers who are leaving policing and the fact that there is a much bigger cohort now of officers with typically 5 years in, and there must be some way to retain those individuals. And again, maybe that, along with the development of a new process that's alluded to with the College of Policing, there's not much mentioned about that, but it may be that that helps people progress their careers. But you know, as you all know listening to this, you know, 5 years, you've got to get 2 or 3 years in before you think about going for promotion. So technically, yeah, 5 years. Years ago, people didn't get promoted till they had 8, 10 years into sergeant, 10 years plus for inspector. So that experience was there. So I'm not sure what the flip side of that coin is. If you've got a vast cohort of officers with 5 years on, we're choosing to select leaders from that. I think there needs to be a lot more work done around retention, certainly for the officers in at the moment with that experience and who do want to stay promoted, if you like, or stay in their positions and not leave the service. So there's lots of options that can be done. I know that the pay issue is being pushed at the moment, and there may be other aspects for development and retention schemes that are in, you know, in the woodwork, shall we say, ready to come out. But you know, at the end of the day, promotion isn't necessarily fair for everyone. There's a whole issue around neurodiversity as well, and I've just done a whole series of blogs on that about, you know, excluding through processes people who are neurodiverse or neurodivergent. So and do our processes enable career progression for individuals experiencing those conditions or with that particular set of skills, shall we say? And as I say, that's back to the Holy Grail issue. There isn't a Holy Grail. We can always aspire and strive to get there, and I think probably incrementally we'll probably head there with a couple of dips and potholes along the way. But for those of you who are listening to this, there's always help and support available at Rank Success, and I'd be always happy to pick up the phone if you've got any queries if you're on that promotion journey. So until next time, I'll be back with another podcast. Take care and stay safe.